click on connect or look up hashtag Afrobeat Radio. It's going to be fun.
Public media is under fire, but it cannot be bought. My name is Brake Edwards. I'm the host of the Artsy Fartsy Show, which airs on Tuesdays at 2 p.m. WBAI is listener-sponsored, commercial-free radio, reporting on news that we know matters to you. Instead of the headline-grabbing sensationalism, consider joining public media that tells the truth by making a tax-free donation to this station. You can donate by going right to our website, give2wbai.org, or pledge right from your smartphone by texting WBAI to 41444. Thank you so much for your support.
And you are listening to radio station WBAI 99.5 FM on the web at WBAI.org. The time is just about 8 p.m. on a Wednesday night. That means it's time for another exciting edition of Off the Hook.
The telephone keeps ringing, so I ripped it off the wall. I cut myself while shaving, now I can't make a call. We couldn't get much worse, but if they could, they would. From Billy Bomb for the best.
And a very good evening to you. This program is Off the Hook. Rob T. Firefly here with you. And I'm joined in the studio by the rest of the folks. The rest of the Off the Hook folks are not here. They're all doing things. We've got this little convention coming up in a couple of days. And Emmanuel, Kyle, Alex, Voltaire, they're all just running around trying to get things sorted out. So, you know, I said I'd do this thing today by myself. And I suppose I could really handle it. I mean, I don't know if I want to do a whole hour by myself in here, but fortunately, I did bring some friends along. Hey, everyone.
Hey! He owes me $5.
Yes, indeed. This is the special Hope edition of Off the Hook. Ooh. And we are doing our conference in starting this Friday called A Hacker's Dozen. And you can find all the information you want about it on xii.hope.net, and there's some really interesting stuff going on. So I've invited a lot of folks who are presenting at the conference and otherwise involved, and so I think I'll just go around the room, and maybe one by one you can fight your way through this crowd, come up to a mic, and introduce yourself and say what you're doing at Hope.
Richard Cheshire here, the Cheshire Catalyst. I'll be there Friday at 11 a.m. Talking about how you should set up a .mobi website for use on older mobile phones, not just the smartphones of the day.
My name is Mitch, and I'm helping organize a bunch of things, but primarily the workshops at Hope. There's going to be about 40 of them. I'll be giving workshops myself on Arduino and soldering. Other people will be doing lots of other interesting workshops that I hope you'll enjoy, including how to get information from our very dear government through the Freedom of Information Act, how to set up a VPN, virtual private network, on a Raspberry Pi, how to set up Tor on Raspberry Pi so you can surf the net anonymously. People will be learning how to take the amateur radio exam and taking the amateur radio exam. There'll probably be about 50 new amateur radio licensees after Hope. And there's going to be a bunch of really interesting, very diverse workshops happening at Hope. I'm also giving a talk on one of my latest electronic kits, which is a music synthesizer kit. And it's for total beginners, and my talk will show people who don't know anything how you make sound and noise and music from a microcontroller, a computer chip. So if you're interested in that, come on by. I'll also be on a panel about the history of the maker movement. There's a lot of disinformation going around on our planet now. Have you noticed that? There's a lot of disinformation going around. So we're going to try to set the record, maybe not straight, but interesting.
Wow. And you're sure that's all? Or,
if you want to help bring tables in at 8 in the morning tomorrow on 32nd Street.
We'll get into that. Go ahead.
Mitch Altman, why did you look at me when you said disinformation on the internet?
That's because he was looking at me.
Pretty
Hello, everybody.
So.
Neo, I'll be also preparing at the information booth, also known as the disinformation desk. A lot of volunteer coordination at the last minute. I also haven't finished my slides! So
for your talk on
accessibility.
Of which we spoke when you were
just
here
just
last.
Recently. Yes. It felt like a month ago.
Just want to note, Neo is very accessible.
Oh, always.
Welcome here. This is Side Pocket. I'm one of the slave drivers. I mean content coordinators of a little tiny but very important booth at Circle of Hope called the Radio Stadtla. It's the near 72-hour radio station where we bring on lots of content. So if you are unable to make it to Hope or you just want to engage in some shenanigans, you can always tune into the radio. We bring in on a lot of people who have been speaking, including a bunch of the people that I hopefully in this room will come by and invite on. And we also have a lot of exclusive content, too many to list here. And speaking of content, I'll pass this off to the person to my metaphorical left.
Hi, my name's Tamara, or Corset Lore. A lot of you may know me, actually, by that name. I'm one of the concert organizers for the Hope Conference. I'm here with my concert cohort, Jessen. Jessen, you want to say hi?
Sure. Hi, this is Jessen. Most people know me by that name because it is my name. And I'm glad to be able to help you, Tamara, with the organization of the concert at Hope this year.
Yes, I think is now a good time, Rob? Okay, yes. I think it's going to be quite an excellent show this year. We're doing one night this time of eight musicians and three visualists. And it's going to be spectacular because, as per our usual Chiptunes show, we're going to have Game Boys, but we're also going to have Nintendo DS, which is kind of a new thing to add over the last few years. We're going to have radios, a couple conceptual radio performers, XOADC, who also has a workshop on Saturday morning demonstrating her theremin interface, which is really interesting. Her theremin will trigger, contact mic recordings and images of Radio Canada International shortwave towers that were demolished in 2014. So that'll be really fascinating to see that live, and then also for Hope attendees to actually get to get a feel for that instrument because she's going to be showing it. Then we also have our mainstay iconic culture jammer and remix artist, Radio Wonderland, who will be closing out the show with his live FM radio feed that he's going to be, mashing and mixing and remixing for your entertainment.
Excellent.
And I am Night Owl. I will be spending a lot of my time this year at Hope working with Tool, the open organization of lockpickers, where we will be, as usual, running the Lockpick Village on the mezzanine of the conference, where we will be teaching all comers how locks work and the basics of how to pick them. We'll have our members there able to provide you with equipment and also to give you a few tips if you already have learned the basics from our introductory lectures. Friday night, we also have a special two-hour live panel where we will be answering questions from the audience, and we also are encouraging people to submit their questions for the panel over Twitter using the hashtag LettersFromLockSport. Saturday evening, I will also be running a workshop, thanks very much to Mitch for the help getting that set up, teaching people who are already involved in lock sport and who have some skills how to rebuild and modify their locks to make them even more challenging and more fun for themselves and other people in the community.
Excellent. And maybe you in the back row, if you could fight your way through.
Hey,
and,
okay, all right. Tell us, way, guys.
Tell us,
she got through.
Hey, I got through.
Also, be careful moving the mics around with your hand. They thump around a lot on the...
We clear?
Okay, yes.
Hi, I'm RNA. I'm a neuroscientist hacker, and I'm going to be giving a talk on Sunday at noon on brain-machine interfaces. The name of the talk is A Wizard Hat for Your Brain, and I'm looking forward to... telling everyone about how these devices work and a little bit about the ethical implications of them, which can be quite large.
Excellent. Well, that's all I've got. I think for the rest of the show, we'll just stare at each other. No.
Well, what do you be talking about? Pray
way
tell.
Ahead of you, Rob.
Well, I'll be talking about a lot of things because during the conference, I'll be emceeing. So I'll be talking about a bunch of you and other folks who are...
People can meet you in person? Can they get autographs?
Only if I can have theirs as well. But... But no, this is just scratching the surface, and of course, those interested can go to xii.hope.net or just hope.net for the site about the Circle of Hope. You can see all these talks, you can see all the other ones that are going on, and we will be streaming the entire event. For those of you who cannot be there, we'll be streaming all the presentations, and that's on hope.net. So check it out.
I've set up a website called h12.mobi. That's h12.mobi, so your mobile phone web browser can access the schedule of the conference and look over the whole conference, see what talks are on. Each day, there's a list of hours at the top. Tap on the hour, and it jumps you down to where those talks actually are. And hopefully, it'll make the whole conference more phone-friendly.
Excellent. And this has been a particular... area of interest to you. I mean, you've been doing this for
a number of hopes
and really doing the whole mobile accessibility thing. What led you to start pursuing that?
Well, just the fact that a lot of websites were not very accessible on mobile phone web browsers, very small screens. And in the old days, you actually had a telephone dial on the front of the phone. Well, there's something called access key as a component of a tag that will let you jump to web addresses. So by tapping the number on the touchtone pad, the web browser reads that and jumps you to the linked expression, the linked page. And when it comes to things like the hours, if you tap number one, that takes you to Friday. Tap number two takes you to Saturday. Tap number three, it takes you to Sunday. And so that's on all the three scheduled pages. Makes it very easy to jump around. If you have an old five-way navigator on your older phone, you get to maneuver left, right, up, and down, and so that can take you to the different hours within the day. Then press the center button. Boom, you're right there at the talk that you want to listen to or find out what's going on at that time in those rooms. That's the whole idea of making it phone-friendly.
Excellent. So, Mitch, I know, like folks have said, you've been doing a lot, not just on your own work and the stuff, but wrangling the workshops. Can you tell us a little bit about those for those who may not be familiar? That things happen at this conference besides the onstage presentations.
Yeah, there's a lot happening at Hope, all the Hopes, including these. Oops, sorry about that. It's the Circle of Hope. So the most exciting thing about going to Hope is not all of the over 100 talks there, which are really interesting, diverse set of people and topics, but the what people do in the hallways and on the mezzanine and at workshops and in betweens. People are getting together and coming up with all sorts of new ideas that, who knows, might even change their lives. So that's what I hope to inspire in people by having them do this hands-on kind of things with the workshops and getting together all the different people who make changes at the last minute that drive me crazy has been way worth it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm glad it's worth it for someone.
No, there are a great many of us who are just a little ragged this week leading up to the conference, trying to get everything just swinging in time. But we always manage to somehow pull it off, and it's really, I mean, that could be considered. I mean, the fact that we do this, we've been doing. Hope has been going on since 1994. Was the first one? 1996.
No, sorry, you're right.
No, 94. Yeah, 94, then 97, then, yeah. So the Fair Swope was in 94, and we're still doing this now. How many years later? What's the 22 years later.
We've been hacking this way too long and way too well.
Yeah, and we've been
24. Excuse me.
24. Yeah, we can mess with computers, but we can't count here.
Math is what I have a computer for.
It's easier if I did it in base 8.
Absolutely. I'm ready to just declare that this whole thing, the fact that we managed to do this, I'm going to go ahead and declare this week's hack of the week. Yep, that's our hack of the week, is the fact that we are still at this and still doing this. I know a lot of you have been basically fixtures at Hope since very early on. Cheshire, you're here. Mitch, you're everyone knows you.
My first Hope is 2006. Hope number 6, was that the name?
Hope number 6 was in 2006. Mm-hmm. The fifth Hope was 2004, was that?
I believe that's how time
yes.
works.
Yes. And
when I walked into the very first Hope, registration was a mess. They had this photographic imaging system for the ID cards. I walked in and everything was in a mess. And having worked registration at science fiction conventions, I just stepped in, ripped up pieces of paper as chits, sent everybody into the conferences and said, come on back later. We'll deal with the registration once the talks have begun, once the conference has started. And I've been a friend of the firm ever since.
Absolutely.
If I may jump in on that, Cheshire, that's one of the most beautiful things that I love about attending Hope is very similar how you got involved is the same way I got involved. I think most of us, I'm always impressed of the amount of pre-planning that's attempted everyone to get Hope set up. But what's so brilliant is that if you see a problem or if you see something where you'd want to add something from your background or to add a bit of flavor or just your expertise, you can come in. Okay. Yeah, I know how microphones work now. that you can volunteer on the spot. You can hop in. You can jump in and just add to the beautiful melting pot of people and expertise that's already there. And that's one of the things that I see that at multiple conventions, but where Hope is, that's where that aspect of the community really shines.
Hope has always been about share the knowledge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what we're all about on this program, at this conference, at this station. Night Owl, I'd like to talk to you a little bit because it's something that people wouldn't generally have thought, I think, was a logical progression many, many years ago. But when lockpicking started showing up at hacker conferences, that was kind of a big deal. I mean, how did that all really get rolling?
So about, what was it? About 12 years ago now, I believe it was, at Hope, a group of lockpickers, hobbyists from the Netherlands, had come over to give a talk at Hope that year. And they ran into, and after their talks, they ran into a group of people from the U.S. who also really enjoyed picking locks, but there weren't really any organizations, there weren't a lot of great resources available at the time. And these guys from the Netherlands told them, well, why don't you just create one? If there isn't a group or an organization already doing this, why don't you just do it yourself? That led to the formation of the U.S. branch of Tool, which is now going very strong. It's now a federally registered nonprofit organization where we now do events all across the country. We have chapters in, I'm not even going to try to count how many states, but we have a nice little map on our website that's mostly up to date. we even have affiliates.
Which website is that?
Oh, it's Tool, T-O-O-O-L, .us is our website. really should remember to mention that. And we now even have affiliates in Canada for some of the cities, particularly closer to the border. We're working on the rest, but, you know, it takes time.
I'll just interject that the first time I went to a hacker conference was Hope 6, and Tool was there, and I learned how to pick a lock. And it's not just about learning to open a lock that you don't have access to, which one could do, but that's you can just use a brick, you know? So it's not as elegant, but it's just amazing that we use these devices, keys and locks, in our daily lives. And hardly anyone knows how it works. And being able to pick a lock makes it, you have to visualize it, and now you know exactly how these things work. And it's just so amazing to have that ability and to know how these things work in our daily lives.
Absolutely. It's really all about the knowledge, which is what we focus on. It's all about sharing the knowledge and developing the knowledge yourself. When you can't find a reference for something, you have to find a sample of the thing and figure out how it works yourself. And then you're the expert on that, and you get to be the one that tells everyone else how to do it. So now, actually, I professionally spend a lot of my time reverse engineering lock designs, particularly older ones that were not particularly well documented, and a lot of them are no longer officially made or supported by their manufacturers, but they're still out there in the world. And so I now reverse engineer these lock designs and publish their specifications so that locksmiths across the country and around the world can continue to keep those locks functioning and running.
Excellent. And the whole lock picking thing, it's like the whole hacker mindset, like those who may not be familiar would think, oh, hackers, okay, that's computers, that's it. But the whole, yes, we know better than that around here, but just the sheer range of the topics that are explored at Hope and at other events like Hope and at our 2600 meetings and just in our community, you could take the whole hacker outlook and apply it to the locks that everyone's got on their doors, and then what do you know, you're a lock picker. And it's really
absolutely
it really opens up all sorts of worlds. It's like Tamara, if I can pull you out of the back sure. row there a bit too sure. It's like the whole hacker outlook is really huge in the chiptune scene. And can you explain to those unfamiliar what a chiptune is and what this all means for those not familiar?
Okay, sure. Well, in a very basic way, a chiptune, I guess, is usually associated, because there are many different consoles you can do this with, but with a Game Boy. And a Game Boy, basically, there were a couple of designers of software in the late 90s that made these two tracker softwares, one called LSDJ, which is called Little Sound DJ, and one that's called Nanoloop. And what those trackers do are, LSDJ, for example, is a four-channel sequencer, and it uses the sound chip in the Game Boy so that you can program your own music and use, you know, the nostalgic sounds of, like, you know, games, Tetris and Mario and all of those things you grew up with, and express your own ideas. So I would say that there's actually, yeah, that's a chiptune. Mm-hmm.
It's like, that's live performance, right?
Yes, and that's you write it in with hex code, and then you can play it back, but you can use live mode to play back certain patterns. We call them chains, and within those chains are phrases.
Right, and in addition to the Game Boys and things of that nature that are being used, there's also this sort of greater electronic music scene where people are actually tinkering with, say, like older toys or pieces of equipment, and making them do things they were never intended to do, and creating art out of the result. Or like you mentioned, Radio Wonderland
yes.
has done with. It's kind of difficult to explain, so I'm going to ask you. Can you explain Radio Wonderland?
Yeah. Well, basically, he has this setup on stage where he has a boombox. I believe it's an old Sanyo. I forget the model. I actually have six of them at home. And they do belong to him, actually. We've had a fun relationship. I used to do some radio improvisation as well, spatially. But so he has like a Sanyo boombox from the 80s that he basically feeds into his computer and uses his shoes, his steering wheel, the iconic steering wheel, to control how he remixes the live feed.
Right.
And he has Macs, of course, running on his computer that way.
Yeah, he takes things that are playing on the radio at that point, you know, tweaks around, finds a station that's playing something, and then whatever comes in live, he'll start remixing and looping and doing interesting things with. And it's really an experience to see. And
yes, absolutely.
That's another example. It's like you've got the sort of circuit bending scene as well that take old like electronic devices and toys and speak and spells and you know, things of that nature, and again just apply a real weird hacker outlook to it, which is, you know, what else can I make this thing do other than what it says in the instruction manual, and getting these fascinating sounds out of them and making art with that.
Yes, absolutely. There's a whole community, since we were talking about community, there's a whole community that's, you know, developed around, you know, using these toys or repurposing toys and other devices to make sounds with. And that's what I really love about it. Justin, would you like to add anything?
Sure. Come on up. And you know, we do have a lot of people packed into a small studio, which is a lot of fun, but it also means people have to push past each other to get to the microphones.
So. Thanks, Tamara. Sure. Yes, I would like to add to what you said. Not only, and I think you mentioned this already, is chiptune all about the music and about repurposing old hardware? It's also about the live component as well of playing music live before people. It could be pre-programmed or it could be done on the fly. And a big part of the live component is also the visual art, which is also something that the chip community has kind of embraced and kind of taken. When you go and see a chip concert, you'll also see live visual art prepared by people who are also like to take things apart, to build things out of software, out of hardware. You're going to see some artists, I don't have time to name them all now, but Energon, for example, from Philadelphia, he takes old video cameras and he takes old equipment and kind of takes them apart and remixes them in interesting ways and projects that on the screen so that while you're listening to music, you also see some interesting, trippy visuals that are augmenting and kind of enhancing the music as well.
Yeah, tell us a little bit about what the visualizers actually do for those unfamiliar.
Sure. All of them have a very unique ways of going about what they do. They sometimes hack hardware and take it apart and kind of manipulate the video waveforms so that they can project it on the screen behind the musician. Some of them use it in time to the music as well. So they will, just like the musicians, just hash out a beat and start playing along something that looks kind of representative of what the musician is playing. And some of them use a combination of hardware and software. One of our visualists from this year, her name is Ms. Paint, and what she does is she codes software and then she creates hardware devices that she can manipulate, for example, moving them back and forth with accelerometers, and based on what she's doing with her hands, pressing buttons, that's what you'll see on the screen.
Yeah, not a lot of people, I think they would go to their first sort of electronic music or chiptune concert and see the stuff going on the screens and not immediately realize that that's stuff that's being tweaked and played with and sort of generated on the fly as things are going on live, versus just like some sort of filter or automatic thing. And that's a whole other chunk of talent right there at work.
Could I add just one quick thing?
Please.
Yes. It is true that the live performance aspect is really important. We also have another visualist who really, focuses on trying to be an improviser. And he's going to play, Vaporstack is his name, actually. He's going to be doing visuals for Kurt Underscore and Animal Style, who's a musician from the past, will also be there. But Vaporstack has a very interesting one-bit aesthetic that he developed from, you know, an emulated 68K Macintosh. And he's going to, you know, he still uses that aesthetic in sort of a procedural way with his own coding and software to generate real-time graphics so that, you know, the visuals will change and, you know, undulate and move. and he's actually added color to it, just a splash. But that's kind of a new thing for him. So it'll be very interesting, I think, to see that, see him perform that in action.
He discovered the chroma in the color signal.
Right.
Excellent. And for those interested, is the concert, how do people get to that if they want to go?
Right. The concert will be on the lower level in, I believe, the Hope name for the ballroom is Richie. Mm-hmm. And it's at 9 o'clock, doors at 8:30.
Friday.
Yep. 9 p.m.
Oh, thank you. Yep. Yes, Friday night.
Excellent. And it's a separate thing from Hope itself. Like, you can get in without the Hope registration?
Oh, yes, absolutely. It is open to the public, but it is free to Hope attendees. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Free to attendees, and everyone else needs a ticket.
Yes, that's correct.
Which will be available at the door.
Yes.
Okay, great. Yes. Just one of the many things that that's going to be really special. Yes. Oh, okay.
I would actually just like to add in that while we're still working out details, once again, Radio Statlers, for those those who can't make it to Hope or having trouble with scheduling, we are going to attempt to, as usual, restream at least in part of that chiptune content on our radio. And also Radio Wonderland is going to have a preview of what they do and their music earlier in that day on Friday on the radio. So if you want to kind of get behind the scenes of how that works, definitely tune in.
Excellent. Tell us a little bit more about Radio Statler.
I'm going to stand up for this so I can, there we go. So Radio Statler has been going on way longer than I have, unfortunately. It was started by a bunch of awesome, that I get to call awesome teammates now, such as Tech Darko, Bunny, Johnny Xmas, just a whole talented team of people. And we were just sort of sitting around thinking, like, there's so many people that we know that live in other states, other countries who are unable to make it. And there's also so many great stories that has happened on the mezzanine and throughout the convention that we would just love to see documented, whether they kind of want to or not, at the
names
conference.
Names changed to protect the guilty? Or
yes.
the bribery check has been cleared.
Yes, just a nice snapshot of the con. So one of the ideas was just in pure audio form, send all that content out there. And it's been an interesting, trippy sort of thing, like with most things at Hope, such as the Lockpick Village and the Hacker Village. Yep. It started off as a small team, and it's kind of grown to be a kind of, I wouldn't maybe say big part of the convention, but definitely an integral part of the whole experience. We have people who have, it's their first con, have come down. We've had veterans such as Cheshire and Mitch in the past, Neo and Night Owl, who in addition to their talks do a regular show called 26 O'Clock that happens at 2 a.m. every time when they remember to actually show up.
Hey, we were overloaded last time.
Then again,
they've always showed up.
Yes. Then again, every Saturday, every Friday and Saturday night, we're often also just playing games and talking to people. There's usually a lot of drinking that goes on. You don't have to drink to be at Radio Statler. In fact, we'd love you if you didn't, because you will be the coherent person in charge of the booth that day. But I digress. It's a very fun experience that's evolved throughout the convention. And we just have so much, because there's so much content at Hope this year. We have so many interesting pieces that are happening on the radio, some that I'm involved in, some that Beaches are involved in, and schedule's going to come up in the next day or two, so stay tuned.
And the web address to reach it is statler.hope.net.
Thank you for that. And I also want to shout out Stape, who usually chugs down a 40 and codes out the website in what seems like 10 minutes. So thank you, Stape.
And Radio Statler, it is an actual radio station. It's broadcasting on low power throughout the conference, and it also streams online. And how is your schedule? Like, are you still looking for people to fill that, or is it sort of nailed down now?
So the current state of this, first of all, you very much humor me with the concept of things being nailed down, but I actually like that flexibility for the radio. What we've decided this year is there are people who have submitted in advance their own content, and we've booked out hour and half an hour segments for them. I will be doing segments, you'll see them on the schedule regularly, for guests and speakers at the convention, particularly after their panels, to come in as sort of a potpourri free-for-all, and you will see that on the schedule for the website.
was just going to jump in. Nailed down is probably the worst possible description of what we do. It's more like duct tape together. It allows us the flexibility because sometimes during conferences, there will be a big demand for a particular talk, and we'll have
overflow. Or breaking news.
Or breaking news. So we will always break a pre-programmed segment to jump in and get information to continents in different time zones, to overflowed rooms, and just get the word out and allow people access to all this wonderful happening that's taking place.
Right. First of all, I'm a little uncomfortable with mentioning duct tape because we have our own tape. If you want to stick things on the walls during the conference, get our blue painter's tape. Don't use duct tape because that'll mess up the hotel's paint. And then
that's only
for
volunteers, and if volunteers will know, I will be at the info desk. I believe Night Owl will be spending some time there. I believe Side Pocket.
Unfortunately.
Yes. Yeah, so we will remind you, no duct tape.
Right.
No gaffer's tape.
No, we'll
blue
give you,
painter's tape.
We'll give you some blue painter's tape if you want to post some things on the walls around the conference.
But I'll throw in one more because individuals, like we've said, people jump in to fill voids that they don't see. If they see that they have a poster they want to put up with scotch tape, please do not use painter's tape. We will give it to you for free. We won't even harass you this time.
Right. As the one who's in charge of the signs and the signage and things like that, yeah, I'm stocking up and also just trying very hard to remind folks of this little detail. It's just a little.
What frequency is the low power radio station at?
What frequency is the low power radio station? Thank you.
Unfortunately, that's a kind of a closely kept secret for a specific reason that I'd like to shout out, which is that to the knock, shots fired.
Ooh. Okay, so that information will become available.
Not anymore.
Well, the ham radio frequencies are published, actually, and they can be found at ham.hope.net, so you don't have to write them down now, although Simplex is 147.545, and our repeater for the W2H special event station will be 447.875 megahertz. So you can find us on those frequencies. Please, even if you're just interested in ham radio, come by the 18th floor and visit our ham radio station, which is special event station W2H. We'll be on a few HF frequencies as well, so hams around the country, perhaps even around the world, should be able to pick us up.
Excellent. And I hate to call you out on this right now, but at radio.hope.net, it's still the site from last time. You guys.
Stop it. Get working now.
So, people can follow Radio Statler on Twitter at Radio Statler, all one word, which I'm looking at right now. And it looks like that's things have been done here in the past 2 years, so that's good.
I do want to jump in for 1 minute and just circle back on the painter's tape situation. A little birdie told me that it's not even painter's tape anymore. Now we're being asked to use something called artist tape, which you can find at any art supply store, Blick, on one of these places. Maybe I shouldn't,
That would be the white tape instead of blue tape.
Right. So it's not blue painter's tape. It's artist tape is what it's called. That's, you know, if you ask for that at an art supply store, they'll give you that. And that is even better than painter's tape for not damaging walls.
Excellent.
But when people
are
coming to ask for it, as we've just been offered, they come to the information desk to find it?
At the info desk, yes.
Very well.
For a bribe.
Bring them a piece of candy or something.
Well, usually we need some food.
Food is good. Yeah, we have the
3-2-1 rule, I believe, is in effect.
Yeah, I heard of it as a 5-2-1 rule.
Yes.
But
I made it a 4-3-2-1 rule. I don't know where the 5 came from.
Well, I think I first heard of it as a 5-2-1 rule, and that came from like the Comic Con, Anime Con sort of scene, which was Side Pocket. Do you want to explain the 5-2-1 rule?
I remember exactly how it goes because I'm behind this myself. Is 5 hours of sleep. Two meals a day, and
one
please
shower.
Yes, one shower.
Take a bar of soap, put it on your body, rub it up and down.
Yes.
We will love you for it.
Every day of a conference, 5-2-1, get at least five hours of solid sleep, two square meals, and one shower.
I'll also throw in a 4 into this mix. Drink plenty of water. It is hot. It is New York. It is summer. It is humid. You need it. Think of your health, bubba. Seriously.
Right,
well.
Night Owl?
Excellent, yeah.
It is easy to forget these things when you're
it
all
is.
Wrapped up and time just goes away.
It's also very easy to get wrapped up in these things and forget those things when you are the only person fulfilling a essential function, and you are having difficulty flagging anyone down long enough to point out that you really need someone to relieve you so that you can step away for more than a minute and a half.
Relieve yourself.
Look, yes.
Fresh air, yes.
A volunteer has one near-death experience at a conference, and he's just bitter about it for years and years after.
I don't know why he'd hold a grudge.
I do want to quickly interject that Hope is run by an amazing volunteer squad that's put together every year. Also, as regulars of people throughout the mezzanine who have talks, if you are interested in something or if you have a question or you possibly need help, please reach out to Hope staff volunteers or just friendly faces. And if especially in question, look out for the security team. They're amazing. They're some of them personal friends of ours. Just if you need a helping hand, please don't be afraid to reach out.
Absolutely. And we always need volunteers. We need volunteers in a big way tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Tomorrow is our setup day. So if you're in town, if you'd like to stop by the conference a day early, you can square away your registration and everything, pick up your ticket. But also, you could volunteer to help us set everything up, and you will be pointed in a direction and passed along to somebody who can tell you exactly how you can help.
Tomorrow, starting at 8 a.m., I believe, at the loading bay on 32nd Street on the south side of the hotel, or in the entrance to the, the event pavilion, I believe, is that mm-hmm. area of the hotel?
Penn Plaza Pavilion.
Yes. And if you see Lindsay, she is our lovely volunteer coordinator who is driven mad every 2 years.
She's a saint. She has
wrangling all of these volunteers and never gets enough thanks for it. So if you do see her, buy her a drink or a nice meal at a hotel restaurant.
Make sure she gets plenty of her daily requirements of hugs and thanks. And if you see any roller skates flying by, that'll be her because she is all over the place.
Mm-hmm. With consent.
Absolutely.
It's a lot of fun to volunteer at Hope.
Absolutely. It's how I got started. Long before I was on staff, I was one of the volunteers being pointed in directions and, you know, just went from there. And now here I am.
And getting suckered into volunteering, you meet everybody. You have this time that you can spend with other hackers, not so much on the stage and in their personas, but you get to meet people and understand them and really create and cement friendships that last very long, very strong. There are people I haven't seen who are on the other side of the planet. I'll be hugging them to bits in 2 years, you know?
Absolutely.
And this is the time to pay it off.
You know, a lot of us have our Hope family. We catch up every 2 years, and you know, for a few days, we're just right there again and picking right up from where we left off. RNA, I'd like to pull you out of the crowd back there for a bit.
I want to know wizard hats.
Yes.
And, how can I help you?
If you can crowd surf over here and tell us a little bit more about what you're presenting, because it's something I think a bit unusual, but also just really fascinating in its own way around here. And so
it's kind of all good. It's kind of hard to compress what this is about. Brain-machine interfaces is a huge field of a technology, starting from non-invasive to invasive. But basically, it's understanding what people are thinking by reading some aspect of their of the function of their brain. And it usually has a lot to do with the electrical potentials as the neurons are firing. It could have something to do with reading the oxygenation levels or metabolic levels. But to me, the basic question is, as you come to understand what somebody else is thinking, it turns out, first of all, it's not as hard as you think. It doesn't need as advanced electronics. It needs some advanced mathematical techniques and deconvolutions, but it's a lot easier. And with the tools of deep learning and AI, it turns out to have a tremendous amount of power. So in addition to describing the technology in the talk, I am also want to pose the question to the hacker community. We need to understand this. We need to keep it open source. And we need to sort of question the ethics of what's going on. It's a technology that Facebook is taking a pretty deep dive into. And there's a talk that I'm going to reference in my talk. And they're saying how amazing this technology is going to be and how safe it's going to be, because they're going to make sure that they only read your thoughts from your speech center that you voluntarily send there. And, yeah, I hear the laughter. I think we should all
consent
laugh.
Consent is key, isn't it?
Yeah. Consent is everything.
Because how can you guarantee that when they're not even sure the spatiotemporal coordinates of where the speech center is? And they're just going to take the signals from that part of the brain that really... I don't want to piss off Facebook because I'm on the air, but it's a little questionable.
Oh,
and
no,
I
piss
think,
off Facebook. We encourage
I don't want them to come after me. But because they'll read my brainwaves, and they'll know exactly what I'm thinking about them. So in any case, we're the community that can help keep the ethics of this above board. It's the hackers that can intervene, that can make sure this is open source, that can keep the code on GitHub and other places, and can say, what is this bit of code doing? What kind of parameters are they using in this machine learning interface? I don't know that I trust this weighting scheme, you know, or what's this neural network doing? Why is there this whole section that is proprietary, and what's it classifying in there, and how do we know that it's doing it right or that it's not sending information to a part of the brain that might be damaging to the individual, you know, damaging in a way that it might change your thoughts in a slight way that over time will change your behavior in a way that is desired. Not by you, but by maybe the people who are in charge of the programming of the brain-machine interface. So those are all the kind of topics that I'll be talking about.
Excellent. And you are, as maybe evident to the listener, you are actually a scientist in real life.
I am a scientist in real life when I'm not here, and even when I am here. Yes.
Excellent. And, you know, just one of the diverse backgrounds of all the sorts of weird folks we get at our events. But how is sort of, because you've also been a long time friend of the local hacker community, and you know, how did the sort of the hacker mindset and the scientific mindset sort of inform one another?
I think that's a really good question. So I see a lot of people, for example, getting into AI and machine learning, and I don't think they're all hackers, even though I think it's a perfect place for hackers to go, sort of from the beginning, because it's asking very complicated, very layered and hierarchical questions. But it turns out you're getting a lot of people who are just learning protocols. They're just saying, okay, I'm gonna take this software and I'm gonna put in these parameters and I'm gonna get an answer and I'm gonna get a job at Google or Facebook, and this is really cool. They're not looking at the big picture. I think for me, my interest in the hacker community and by being part of it, I've learned to always take things apart. Something I knew when I was a little kid, but it's encouraged by this community. You want to understand it. You want to make it. You want to make technology do things that maybe it's not designed to do, that maybe it's not obvious that it will do, and you want to understand all the implications of what it's doing. If a circuit does this, can it also do that? If I have something that sets out a frequency of 3,000 and I change a transistor, a resistor, a capacitor, can I make it put out 2,600 hertz instead, even though it's not intended to? You know, can I take out this jumper and change the channels that I can get on my box at home? So that's the hacker mentality, and it's so important because you can't do any of that if you don't have a full and complete understanding of the system that you're trying to understand in the first place.
Excellent. And what kind of stuff? What kinds of stuff besides your own work at Hope? What kinds of stuff do you tend to check out at these events? Because you've been going to Hope now for a very long time as well.
I've been to every Hope.
You've been
actually
to every Hope. I think you have Hope seniority, because I missed the first couple.
Yeah.
I think in this room you're the official.
All right, the old timer.
You're the senior hoper.
Yes.
I think Cheshire, you might have been to every Hope as well. Yes, you were at the first one, as we just.
Yeah.
Okay, so the
so
two
I've
of you.
I've seen you at several Hopes. Yes. So, yeah, we've spoken.
The two of you are the official Hope grandmasters, I think. So yeah. So as you've been going to Hopes, what sort of stuff do you tend to check out?
Well, I love Steve Rambam's talks. His epic 3-hour. Very in-depth deep dives into privacy and security, and he has been saying things for a long time that I think are very important for people to know. I love Radio Statler. I am a ham radio person myself, and I just definitely love to hang out with those guys. I actually knew them before I had my license, and then I didn't get my tech license here, but I did get it in New York, and now I'm general, and just put up a 40-meter antenna at my home, which I'm very proud of. Yeah, so that has been a hobby that I always dig into when I'm here with like-minded people and learn a lot. So I enjoy exploring those areas.
Yeah, we should note that in the workshops end of things, we do have a lot of amateur radio stuff, including your FCC license exams and a review session for the FCC technician class
study
license.
Study hard, kids. Yes. Study hard.
I want to mention, by the way, that for years Hope has had workshops, but particularly like when I checked out the website, went update, I was floored by all the talks. And then when I went to workshops, I actually have like five or six workshops that I really want to go to that I can't miss out on. So, like, I feel like sometimes a lot of people don't realize that there are workshops at Hope, and especially if you're going to this year, this is one H of a year to go and check these out and learn something new.
And it is different because, like, if there's a talk that you miss, you can always catch it. You can always catch it up later. We have the videos and everything else. But the workshops, that's an experience that happens there at that moment with the folks around you, and you can't really duplicate that.
I understand that there's also going to be a table this year from some newcomers. The Alcor people are going to be here, and they're going to be speaking about their unique contributions and their sort of hacks, putting together an understanding in a deeper way how to cryonically preserve people. So I think that'll also be a very interesting addition this year.
Well, that sounds cool.
Yeah. I'm
going to take a lot of notes.
Yeah.
Yes, I did that.
We're ashamed to know you. Next time you're doing the show alone.
So I'll turn it over to our other senior member over here, Cheshire, and ask what's the sorts of things that you tend to want to go see and check out at Hope besides your own stuff.
Well, I would like to get some people talking about Asterisk, which is the new form of telephone hacking. People creating their own dial plans and setting things up. There's a couple of websites I found on the internet where people share knowledge on that. I don't have mommy right now, but we'll definitely have to look them up and get them out to people because it's fun. By adding two different circuit cards into your old IBM PC, you can have basically a PBX, a private branch exchange, just like businesses have, with your own built-in performance. You know, press one for this, press two for that. You can make your own recordings for that or cop some off the internet. There's some funny ones out there, too. And this is how the old phone freaks have morphed into computer hackers and morphing back into phones.
Absolutely. That's where I started out. I was phone freaking way back when you could do such a thing. And it was a lot of fun, but it also was sort of my gateway into the greater world of tweaking around with other devices besides the phone. And especially in the very old days, those of us of a certain age remember when not everyone had computers, but everyone had a phone and you could pick it up and connect to basically the biggest computer in the world and explore to your heart's content.
Sorry to interrupt, Mitch, but I did hear a rumor that this year we will be having a actual PBX on the premises. Just a rumor, but if you happen to remember or still have the manuals for the old Merlin and Merlin Legend series, AT&T PBXs, you might want to brush up.
Excellent.
Has this rumor been officially denied by anybody?
It absolutely is untrue.
In that case, it must be true.
Well, that all seems fairly straightforward. And of course, if talking of vintage things, we'll have the vintage computer folks up there with their whole table on the mezzanine, and they'll be doing some other stuff. And really, I'm sorry.
I'm pointing to Mitch because there's
things being pointed at. Yeah.
I didn't want to interrupt the flow, but I was going to talk about things you could do hands-on. We're going to have over 50 soldering stations at the Hardware Hacking Village.
We're constantly at a shortage of those, aren't we?
So it's often quite hopping. It's really fun. We'll have a lot of people with kits for beginners that they make, all open source. And anyone can learn to solder. It's a lot of fun, and it's really useful. And it's actually easy when shown by people who know what they're doing. And soon, you will know what you're doing if you come by. And anytime there's not another workshop happening at the Hardware Hacking Village, there's time for people to learn to solder and make something cool all with your own little hands.
Excellent. And already, if you think you already know how to solder, I can tell you this from experience, because when I first took your How to Solder workshop, Mitch, at Hope, I had been soldering for basically my entire life, including on a professional level at a hardware company. And then I took your soldering workshop, and I realized how much more easy it was than I thought it was. And I learned a great deal, and I'm so much better at it now. So, yeah,
glad to help.
You're never too old to learn, and you're never too old to brush up and improve. So yeah, there's all kinds of stuff. And you said you had workshops on your music synthesizer. Could you talk a bit about that?
Yeah, so I've The first kit that I made to teach soldering, well, you know, I came to Hope, it was my first hacker event, and that was in 2006, and no one was making anything. And so at the next Hope, well, it wasn't actually the next Hope, the next Hope was like several Hopes later, but it was actually the last Hope, which came before the next Hope.
And the last Hope was, of course, several Hopes ago. So.
Indeed.
It so, lasted, all right.
Thank you, Emmanuel.
And at the last Hope, which wasn't the last Hope, but it was, anyways, I started teaching soldering, and it was a big hit, so I've been doing it more and more all over the place. But I needed a kit in order to teach people how to solder and make it fun, so I had a TV Be Gone kit there, which is a really fun way, and it's still a popular kit, and we'll have those available so you can go around the world turning TVs off and making the world a better place for everybody with one that you make yourself. And I've added many more kits through the years. My most recent one is to make really interesting and beautiful sound and also nasty noises with a simple little board that you can solder together yourself. And if you want to, you can learn how to generate noise and sound and music with computer chips, microcontrollers. And that's what my talk will be about. But just by making this kit, you can read the documentation and learn from it. And if you have any questions at Hope, just grab me live and in person. So yeah, it's a fun way to do it. And there are a lot and lot of other kits as well. So come on by and have fun, and we can all solder together.
Please grab Mitch with consent.
Yes, consent always is ask important. First.
We do have a code of conduct at Hope, but.
Mitch, excuse me. Yeah, your workshop.
That can happen anytime. There's not another workshop happening at Hope, which is going on from 10 in the morning on Friday all the way through 8 at night on Sunday.
Mm-hmm. And that's another time when we'll need volunteers. We'll need volunteers to help us wrap things up at the end of the conference. So if you're in town and you got some free time and you'd like to earn some brownie points from us, yes.
And maybe a t-shirt.
not only brownie points, but that's when you get to see people when they've relaxed, they've all had their fun, and you meet people, you get to know them, you get to chat with them, you make connections. Hint, hint, hint. So stick around, yes. You know, afterwards for the breakdown, because last time we did it in about 6 hours, and it was phenomenal. Everybody had a blast. Set up today, tomorrow.
Yeah. I'm about 11 hours here. From now.
About 11 hours from now, we'll be setting up. And, you know, friendships will be made, blasts will be had, hopefully not literal blasts. But do show up, do volunteer. You know, Lindsay, if you're out there, we're sending you all the best troops we got.
Love, love, love.
Absolutely.
Lots of love.
And with that, I think there's not much left to do. Oh, I did want to mention our friend Voltaire of this program is working on QueerCon, which is events at Hope to bring together the LGBTQIA plus aspects of our community. And you could go to QueerConNYC on Twitter or QueerCon.NYC on the web. They'll be having social activities Friday at 5 p.m., meeting at the registration desk, and Saturday and Sunday plans are TBD right now, but they'll be announced in a day or so on the Twitter. So that's QueerConNYC on Twitter or QueerCon, that's QueerCon.NYC on the web. So be sure to check that out if you're interested. And with that, I will just say yes, come to Hope or watch the streams that will be available. Thanks to our friends at the Internet Society, and next week you'll be hearing us all in recovery from throwing this event that means so much to us and so much to our community.
Send help. it's both therapy and release at the same time. So yeah.
Absolutely. Yes. And so be sure to send us email, oth@2600.com. Follow us on Twitter and message us, Hacker Radio Show. And you are listening right now to one of Tamara's pieces, Corset Lore. This is Waking in the Forest. And you can find that on Corset Lore's Bandcamp page. Thank you very much. Stay tuned for the Personal Computer Show. For Off the Hook, this is Rob T. Firefly. Good night. Thank you. Time is just about 9 p.m. on this Wednesday evening. You are listening to radio station WBAI 99.5 FM on the web at WBAI.org. And it's just about time for the PC Radio Show.
Today is July 18th, 2018. Do you know who has your personal data? Let me ask the question a little differently. Do you know who's using your personal data? Welcome to the Personal Computer Show. This is the original personal computer radio show of all things computing. I'm Hank Key and my colleague is Joe King. Podcasts of the programs available on wbai.org/archive, also on prn.fm, and on our website, pcradioshow.org. We are on WBAI-FM 99.5, New York on the radio, and prn.fm on the internet each Wednesday, with essentially the same program, except when WBAI is in a membership drive. The programs are different. Tonight, WBAI is on a membership drive. Tonight, we have a great program put together for you. But before we get to it, we have a little housekeeping to take care of. We still have a shortfall of operating funds. As many of the listeners are aware, we seem to be in constant fundraising mode. We are fundraising to continue the present operation. The clock has been reset, but we are still in a financial hole. We are vitally in need of listener support. We are vitally in need of your support. The Personal Computer Show has been operating with a handicap. We don't have telephone lines for listener calls, as this was a most popular segment of the broadcast, as we answer or try to answer your computer questions. Couple that with a shift to a later hour. Many listeners now just download the program instead of listening to the live broadcast. We are asking you to be generous with what you can donate. We've been on the air 35 years, and Joe King and I thank you for your continued support. We feel that we have been a part of your computing experience. We have been offering information that is not readily available on mainstream media. We receive no financial compensation of any kind. In fact, the operating cost for the program support, such as the website, is a personal expense. We call the news objectively, and there are no advertisers we are beholden to. Unlike Facebook, you are the customer and not the product. We are in need of your financial support, and here's how you can donate. We have been broadcasting each week All Things Computing. For the past 35 years, we have been reporting and evaluating computer products and services, of which many of the important news items related to computer technology is under the radar and it is not covered by the mainstream media. The mainstream media coverage of technology is superficial and normally confined to value of tech companies. We look beyond the hype, and since we do not have advertisers, we have and will continue to be unrestrained from commenting objectively. We are not adverse from giving the Bronx Chair if that's what it deserves. The premium we offer is the Personal Computer Show. There are different ways to support WBAI. You can show your appreciation for your favorite show by becoming a sponsor by making a one-time donation in the name of your favorite WBAI show. Of course, we ask you to support the show, the Personal Computer Show. The number to call is 516-620-3602. That's an awkward number to remember, so I'll just repeat it again. 516-620-3602. We hope to continue to be on WBAI with your support, and with enough support, we don't end up being preempted every other week or subject to last-minute preemptions. You can always leave a legacy that truly matters. Remember WBAI in your will, and know that your bequest will help ensure that WBAI's message of peace, tolerance, and inclusion, and the ability to have alternative programming to continue to inspire New Yorkers long into the future. To include WBAI in your will, please call the WBAI Development Director at 347-335-0066. Let me repeat that. 347-355-0066. We will be glad to answer any questions and assist in arranging your request. Don't want to donate online? Well, you can send a check or money order made out to WBAI, Attention Development, 388 Atlantic Avenue, Brooklyn, New York, 11217. A BAI buddy is someone who signs up to make a recurring monthly donation to WBAI using either a credit or a debit card. Once you've joined, you will receive a WBAI buddy card and WBAI tote bag. The card allows you to participate in the many member benefits, including discounts offered by our BAI buddy partners. You can call 516-620-3602. And tell them you want to become a BAI buddy, and we'll be glad to help you get set up. Back to basics on computing hardware. If you're running a business and you have an immediate need for computing equipment or software, you make the necessary purchase at that moment in time. You don't wait for a sale. This is equally true if you need hardware or software to satisfy an immediate, real, personal need. If you can wait for a special sale, you may ask, when is the next special? We all know about Black Friday and the few days before and after, which also includes Cyber Monday. There are special sales in varying degrees of discount when there are federal holidays that are part of a long 3-day weekend. The number of items that go on sale may not be as widespread as Black Friday, but if you're patient, there are items of value. There is some important advice you must take heed of. A great or fantastic, unbelievable item may have very little value if you really don't need to make the purchase. I know that when prices are at rock bottom, the temptation is enormous. I wonder how many blockbuster computer items you have purchased that are still sitting in the drawer or closet because you think you'll need it one day. Don't worry. The item that went on sale will cost less in 6 months when it's no longer on sale. There's another thing to remember. The item for sale is at net dollars, which means the actual gross dollars may go up to twice the net amount of real income. A prudent rule of thumb is to buy what you need today, for tomorrow when it's needed, it'll cost less. Then there's the issue of buying merchandise from overseas. I just haven't had any consistent success buying from overseas merchants. This is especially true trying to purchase OEM replacement parts that are no longer available from the original manufacturer. The issue is when it involves parts such as batteries, power supplies, and anything that has related electrical values. The ratings are often bogus. Even a simple thing like a power line cord can be suspect. You think something as simple as this would be, well, label UL approved. In reality, they're not at all labeled as such. This is why many hardware manufacturers have had to do a recall on these AC cords. Then there's the issue of buying refurbished equipment. Buying refurb equipment directly from the manufacturer doesn't create any problems at all. If there is a real issue, the original manufacturer, as a rule, actually accepts returns and provide you with an equivalent or greater value replacement. This is almost akin to buying a certified pre-owned car. That which is a fancy word for a used car, but the certification is a real multi-point certification from the car manufacturer. If it is from a used car dealer, you probably don't have that much confidence in the purchase. When you purchase used equipment from a dealer, it may have pulled equipment. Pulled equipment is hardware taken from another computer. The hardware itself could be a peripheral that is out of warranty or of marginal performance. You may ask under what circumstances I would purchase used equipment directly from another user. Well, I consider myself quite conversant and qualified to evaluate hardware, but as a rule for the average consumer, I would not recommend it unless you have someone who you trust to be knowledgeable to assist you in the purchase of such equipment. And what would I offer for the equipment? I would offer just salvage value. If it is a system unit I am looking to purchase, well, check the BIOS date. The date would be very close to the date of manufacture. Hard disk drives have a date normally notated in work week of the manufacturer year. Find out the CPU model. I use Passmark to identify the effective speed of the processor. Today, there are low-cost systems that I would certainly avoid even though they're brand new. They are equipped with memory storage cards with a capacity of 32 gigabytes or 64 gigabytes. Experience has shown that the early models equipped with 32 gigabytes have virtually run out of storage with each upgraded release of Windows 10. These memory storage cards are soldered onto the motherboard, making any upgrade on your part very difficult. You need to be an expert to know how to desolder these cards without damaging the motherboard. To recap, buy what you need today. Don't worry about buying equipment for the future. And remember, that sale item of today will probably cost the same or even less 6 months from now. And if you don't need it, you don't need to pile the stuff into a drawer or closet so that you could say, someday I'm going to do something with it or I have a special project. Buy it when you need it. Back to basics with a hard disk drive. A doctor can and does prescribe sound advice when treating a patient who has an addiction to smoking. The advice is to simply stop smoking. You can ask those who have since quit smoking how they stop, and the answers are quite varied. There is no set answer. The simplest answer is to go cold turkey. Very few have succeeded with this method. Then you can list all the different things that people have tried. We have been advising people that when they rid themselves of a system, they should make sure there is no personal data that can be retrieved from the unit before it is disposed. The military method is to run a DOD or Department of Defense program like DBAN, that's D-B-A-N, and this is readily available for a personal computer. But this is not a real practical solution in most cases. The process itself is quite lengthy, and the assumption is such a program is universally available for every computing platform. It's not. If the hardware system is no longer operable, meaning you can't boot up or turn on the machine, how would you gain access to the hard disk drive? Many years ago, we had an industrial magnetic bulk eraser at the radio station, manually rotating the physical hard